The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Today on The Breakfast Grill, we have Dato' Mark Lim, Deputy Managing Director of Chuan Huat Resources. Now, the company has been around for more than six decades. It's involved in steel and also IT products. Good morning, Dato'.
Good morning.
All right, so steel and IT products, we understand that this decision to diversify came actually decades ago. What was the justification for moving from your core product, steel, into IT?
Well, it was just that for the steel industry, it's very cyclical. You know, we have seen a few cycles, and during one of the cycles in the 80s, we found that we got to go into another product so that we won't be so dependent on just a steel product. And at that time, everybody is talking about the future, the IT, and that is how we got involved into the IT business.
And has the future panned out the way you hope so? Because you made that foray into IT in the 80s. So here we are about 30 years later. Does it still work?
Well, we started off as a diskette manufacturer.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. That was the time when, diskette was the in thing, you know?
Yeah.
We started with 5 1/4 inch. We moved into 3 1/2 inch. And we even moved into the CD then. But today, the manufacturing environment is getting very tough because we can get the imports cheaper. And that's why we have now today moved into the retail of IT products instead of being a manufacturer.
All right, we'll get into more on your IT segment in just a bit. So obviously, steel is your bread and butter. Back in April, the government has introduced safeguard duties on certain steel products imports for the next 3 years. Now, I assume Chuan Huat views this positively?
Well, of course we view this positively because with the free import of cheaper material from other countries, we are affected with fierce competition from the imported products. With the local, safeguard measure, we are now able to stabilize the prices and also the margins for the products.
And so essentially, you're just passing on these differences, right?
Yes. As far as the company is concerned, the impact is basically no impact because we just pass it on to our customers.
But as a player in the industry, what kind of damage have you seen in the local space that warrants these kinds of protectionist measures?
But as far as the manufacturer is concerned, with the low prices coming in from China, definitely the local steel manufacturers are very much affected.
Is it because we just can't compete?
Well, as far as the Chinese are concerned, actually nobody knows what is the cost. And they are able to bring in prices way below the manufacturing cost for the local steel mill.
So as it stands, these safeguard duties on steel imports, that will end by April 2020. What do you hope will happen between now and then?
Well, between now and then, I think we see more stable prices and more fairer competition among the market players.
But it's one thing to ensure competitiveness in the domestic context, but can we ever compete with the likes of Chinese manufacturers?
From the steel mill point of view, I think we will one day. But today, with this safeguard, I think we are a level playing field now.
2020, do you think that's possible when we can be on par with the Chinese?
Really? I wouldn't know that. I wouldn't know that.
So in other words, like, what would be the risk of these safeguard duties being here for longer, beyond April 2020? Is there a huge risk to that happening?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think so there's a risk to that.
And do you think local steel players have enough will to make sure that they really up their game over the next 3 years?
Yes, I think the local steel mill do have the will to improve their production and the efficiency to bring down the cost.
Okay. Now, also, talking about Chuan Huat Resources, we understand that you have made a 20 million ringgit investment into industrialized building systems. Tell us more about that initiative.
Well, this is the upgrading of our current factory where we are producing wire mesh. With the current difficulty in getting labor and also the cost of getting labor is getting higher, we have decided to go into automation that to improve and increase our product efficiency.
But given the choice, though, would you still go with that cheaper foreign labor?
No.
Okay, no. And why not?
And
because the comments that we hear from industry players is that the cost of IBS is still rather prohibitive, right?
Yes, but I think the as far as that is concerned, the same goes for the our customers, the contractors. I think they would also have a problem getting the labor to work for them as well in the job site. Mm-hmm. They also have a higher cost. And with this IBS product, it will shorten their construction time, and that would be a benefit to them.
So if the benefits are so obvious, why so much resistance from the industry then?
From which side?
From the construction players, developers? I mean, at least that's what we're hearing.
I don't think so. Okay. But I think today, with the government push for this IBS product, I think the local contractors and developers are also accepting this product very well. IBS is a very big word, actually.
Mm. So how do you define IBS then?
IBS just said any products that you can bring to the contractors that they are able to speed up their construction.
What kind of IBS products are you looking at specifically? Because obviously, the kind of growth that you are seeing is enough to warrant a 20 million ringgit investment, right?
Right, that's right, yes.
So what kind of segment are you targeting specifically?
For the IBS product?
Mm.
Well, currently what we have, like I just mentioned, is for the steel mesh and the steel service center. These are the two products that we are already in. Mm. But of course, there are many others IBS product, like for example, those bricks and also those prefab precast products. Mm. So these are also the products that we will be looking at later on.
And so we understand the government mandate requires 50% of IBS content in construction of public projects by next year, 2018, with the private sector having to comply with 70%. Is that enough?
I think that is sufficient for the time being.
For the time being?
Yes.
Is 100% attainable?
I think so. Like, I mean, if you look at the more developed countries like our neighbor Singapore and Hong Kong, you'll find that most of the products are IBS products they're using now. I think it's just a matter of education on the products on the IBS and how we are able to bring down the price, the cost of this product so that the contractors are able to use it more efficiently.
But it seems to be a chicken and egg situation, right? Mm. Whereby if we don't have enough participants engaging with IBS or adopting IBS, then the cost will remain high, right? So how do you kind of balance that out?
I think that is like, well, so you say chicken and egg. Mm. But I think with, like I said, the problems of the labor cost getting higher, I think one day it will balance out.
Mm. And it will push
It developers. Will push for these IBS products.
Mm.
And with the government a strong push forward to encourage everybody to use IBS product, I think this will see the well acceptance of the product in the near future.
But like you rightly pointed out, there's obviously a lot of push from the government side. But what about the players themselves, though? Because what is the difference that sets the Singaporeans and the developers in Hong Kong versus the local players? Why are they so quick to adapt and we are not?
Well, I think it's basically because we are a big country, though, compared to them. You know, in Singapore and Hong Kong, a space is always a problem. Mm. You know, can you imagine that you want to construct a building right in the middle of town, you won't get the space to fabricate those steel cages and all those steel meshes.
Mm.
So it's better to do it off the site.
Well, let's talk about your reliance on foreign labor then, because we understand that you have factories in Nilai, you've got even a factory in
Cambodia.
Puchong and Cambodia as well. Right. How reliant are you on foreign labor?
At the moment, yes, we are fairly reliant on the foreign labor. That is the reason why we have to move forward to automation to cut down the labor costs. I mean, good example like the machine that we are going to get in by the end of this year. If we had to produce the same quantity of that product, we will require 30 workers. But with that machine, we now only need 4 workers. So we can reduce the numbers of workers by that number.
What other ways are you incentivizing either your company or perhaps trying to toe the line in the industry in terms of reducing your dependence on human labor?
But on that part, we are trying to engage more trained labor, the local labor, so that we are able to don't want to rely so much on the foreign labor now.
But you got to try and make the steel industry somewhat sexy, eh? So, I mean, how do you entice the local labor force to actually work in the steel industry? What do you tell them?
Well, honestly, as I said, those steel is a very, very boring, boring product. So there's nothing sexy about it. And it's a product that's been around for centuries. Right.
So, I mean, so how do you then try to make sure that highly skilled Malaysians would want to work in the steel industry?
With the IBS product, it requires more technical skill. So maybe with that technical skill, we're able to entice more local and people to come forward to this industry.
Well, you just got to pay them more, lah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, in just a bit, we'll speak about the outlook for your other segment. I'm speaking to Dato' Mark Lim, Deputy Managing Director of Chuan Huat Resources.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me in the studio is Dato' Mark Lim, Deputy Managing Director of Chuan Huat Resources, whose core product is in steel, but they're also involved in the IT space. Now, Dato', earlier you spoke about how you made this decision to diversify into the IT space back in the 80s as a diskette manufacturer, and now you have moved on to the retail side of things. What's the outlook here for the retail of IT products?
The retail section is looking a little bit difficult and tough, and mainly due to the online. Most of the our customers are now turning to buy online, but as far as Pineapple is concerned, we are also following very much into the online. And we are now having a full-scale team just to focus on the online products.
And as it stands, you have Pineapple IT stores in Wan Utama and where else?
Well, in fact, we have not only in Wan Utama, we're actually in all the Aeon's outlets throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And we have in Tesco throughout the country, in MPH bookshops. And also, we have it in the East Coast Mall in Kuantan. We have it in the Kota Kinabalu, KK. And also in Central, we have it in the Mines shopping complex. Mm-hmm.
So that is quite the geographical footprint there. Yes. But like you mentioned, the shift is obviously towards online, buying these IT products online. So what does it say about your brick-and-mortar stores?
Well, the brick-and-mortar store, I believe they will still be needed and they will still be around. Because, well, most of, especially for those products that needs explanation, they need our shop operators to advise them on the products. So some of these products, customers we think will still come to the shop to buy. And except for those accessories where you can just pick it up from the store, I think these are the products that most customers will now go to buy online.
What are these products that need explanation here?
Well, you need, when you look at those devices, like those...
Such as
you said, actually laptops as well. Most of the customers would like to be advised on, you know, what type of notebook or laptop would suit their needs. And even for those devices, like what we call TV boxes, and most of the customers would not understand what is a TV box unless, you know, they come to a shop and I will be able to explain to them on the application and how to operate a TV box.
And it's been over 2 years since GST was implemented. Has that adversely affected your IT operations?
In a way, yes, it has. But I think after 2 years, I think most of the customers would have got over GST now. And at the moment, I think our customers are accepting the GST.
What about the broader sentiment in the retail space then? Is that being sustained right now?
I think it's just being sustained. As far as the retail section is concerned, the products for IT is more now converted to mobile products. But we have also turned ourselves into selling part of those mobile products. But we are also selling mobile phone, those cables and all. There's accessories to mobile.
We note that there was a 1.8% increase in the revenue of your IT-related products. Do you expect that kind of upward trajectory?
Yes, yes. As far as the growth is concerned, I think there will still be growth. The growth would mostly come from our online. where we see a lot of potential.
And what kind of growth are you looking at there?
Well, I think easily a 10% growth every year.
Every year?
Just on the online.
Okay. Judging by your recent numbers from the first quarter of this year, trading of IT-related products still only accounts for about 10% or so of your overall revenue. So your core operation is still in the trading of hardware and building materials, right?
Yes, that's right.
Are you doing any cross-border trades?
For steel. Well, at the moment, I mean, the only we don't trade cross border, but we will be venturing into like our factory in Cambodia. That's the first one. But we will also be looking at regional, maybe country like Myanmar.
Okay. So you have a timeline on Myanmar?
Well, we are now on the feasible study, so we could be doing it maybe in the next couple of years.
Okay.
Putting up a similar plan in Myanmar as well.
And so why Myanmar and Cambodia as opposed to, say, investing in your domestic operations?
Well, to us, I think that is a growing market. And we see a lot of potential for the product that we are having now.
It's not necessarily something that you can export or import easily.
No, that's right. You cannot, because like I said, our products, actually the main cost is also on logistics. That is one of the major costs. If we do not move our plant to Cambodia, for example, if we had to export to Cambodia, it will cost us much more, just on the freight cost.
So obviously your factory is serving the respective domestic markets there. So what kind of prospects are you seeing for, say, the Malaysian market? Again, given the kind of infrastructure spending that we are seeing, and a lot of investments being made in construction and property developments, I would think there will be a massive catalyst in demand for your products.
Yes, I think... as what you have just said, I mean, with the recent announcement by the government, with all the Chinese investors coming in to build all the infra projects, I think we are very positive that, you know, the demand for our products will be very good for the year.
So the risks for your steel products, is that primarily a domestic-centric issue, or do you see any kind of external risks coming as well?
With the safeguard, I think this more become a domestic issue.
And what are some of the other risks that you're seeing?
Well, basically, we are a trader. And because as a trader, whatever the ups and downs, we are able to pass on to our customers. So in that respect...
I don't know if your customers like hearing you say that, but...
but it's just that it's, as far as we are concerned, the impact to the company is... very minimized.
Now, that's on the trading side, and yes, because it accounts for about 70% of your overall steel operations, but still you got about 30% exposure to the manufacturing of steel products, right?
The manufacturing where we are on is actually this BRC, or the steel mesh manufacturing, and also the cut and bend service center. With these two products, actually we are also looking at expanding not only overseas, but regionally. Because at the moment, we only have one cut and bend center in the central region. As I mentioned, that the logistic is a major cost for this product. So we also be looking at having similar plants up in the north and at the south so that we are able to service the whole country for the product.
And what kind of order book do you have for your manufacturing? Enough to keep you busy for a while?
At the moment, yes, we do have a sufficient order to keep our factory running.
How much and how long?
Well, it's an ongoing thing, you see, because normally for this type of project, we will go for one project. If we take in the project, a project would normally last 2 years, 3 years, and we could be supplying to one project, two projects, 10 projects at one time.
Right.
So it really depends. So the factory will be busy throughout the year.
So as it stands, you have projects to last you for how many years ahead? Do you have any idea there?
Yes, yes. Definitely, at the moment, we have got projects that last us another 3 years.
Okay, 3 years?
Yes.
On average, and what kind of value are we looking at?
Well, it's just the turnover of the factory we are looking at about 100 million.
Well, Dato, let's end on a macro note again. We have seen a rebound in steel prices. How insulated are you from these global trends?
Well, we are stockists. We are a stockist, so in that respect, with the rebound in the steel bar prices, definitely it's good for the company. So we are able to clock in a better profit margin then.
Yeah, because we know that in 2015, you reported a net loss of over 1.5 million ringgit, and I believe you attribute a lot of that to the drop in global steel prices.
That's
how do you mitigate against such an instance happening again?
Well, in fact... there's no mitigation. Yeah. Just like because we are a stockist, like I said, we
so you just got to bear it.
You just bear it. We are just a stockist, so we cannot be like zero stock. You know, when we think that the price will come down, so it's just like something that we have to have the stock all the time.
Right. And do you have an outlook on global steel prices?
Honestly, I wish I know.
Very much subject to the global commodity cycle.
That's right. That's right. I wish I can tell.
Well, good luck in trying to look into your crystal ball and ascertain the future of the global steel industry. Thank you so much for speaking to us here on The Breakfast Grill. That was Dato' Mark Lim, Deputy Managing Director of Chuan Huat Resources. I'm Tan Chung Han, and this is BFM 89.9.
Thank you.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.